There's a hard-working team of professionals that keeps Tanglewood on the lips of both audience members and performers. And I know, Joe, you're going to tell us who the main ingredient in that is.
And that main ingredient would be a dash of VSO's artistic administrator, Tony Fogg. Probably much more than a dash. Tony, thank you very much for being with us. It's always wonderful to have you here.
It's great to be here as always, Joe, and I think you're being extremely generous in your description. But anyway, I will accept it with grace.
We all feel that we're all old friends now. We've done this so many times, and you really are the guy who reaches out to all of the soloists and the guest conductors and everybody else, and no matter what happens, with unflappability, you find somebody who's just great to do that. I've always wanted to ask you one question, though, and that is this. You know, I know you've been very kind in describing Jean-Yves Thibaudeau as one of the great, nicest men in music, who never has a bad word to say about anybody. Do you ever pick based on niceness versus artistry?
No, I think artistry trumps anything else, Alan. Having someone as gracious and as fun as Jean-Yves is a bonus for us. And I don't know whether we bring out the best in artists, but we seem to have a pretty good time with them. And we can always quick to recognize when people are a little nervous, which is normally manifest in some odd sort of behavior. But as we were saying just before we came on board, I've been a friend of Johnny for, I don't know, 27, 28 years, and I can't think of him ever saying anything negative about a colleague or associate or anything. He's one of the most generous artists, and apart from being a supreme pianist.
So let's get down to the cases here. Where do they live when they come here?
Well, variously. You know, there are some fine establishments accommodation-wise around in the area, ranging from small inns and bed and breakfasts to some more luxurious accommodations and private housing. So our artists, depending on what their needs and periods of stay are, if someone's here for a couple of weeks, it's better for everyone if they've got a house that they can live in, and if they've got family and they need a space to work and a kitchen, that's probably the best arrangement. So a lot of places are available for rentals for short periods, and we take advantage of those if we can. And otherwise, it's the well-known establishments that we know in the area.
Mm-hmm. Alan alluded to this a moment ago about one of your jobs, and one of your superpowers is to when someone falls ill or is unable to conduct or to perform for any way, shape, or form, that you find a replacement. You have had to do that probably more than you would like this particular Tanglewood season.
We've had to replace two artists. Very sadly, Raphael Frubeck de Burgos passed away about 6 weeks ago. And the great loss, I think we may have talked about this the last time I was on the show, great friend. And then Christoph von Dockney has illness in his family. His sister is older than he, and he decided he needed to stay in Europe. She's had a serious heart issue. So two conductors, which is not too bad. And we had very, very good replacements. I was extremely happy with the concerts.
So exactly what do you do? I mean, you get the news that somebody has dropped out for one reason or another. What's your first instinct?
You draw up a little list of people who you think may be appropriate for the particular program.
You have to know where they are.
Then you have to find out where they are. Yeah. And nowadays, that's much easier than it used to be. With the internet, a lot of artists have their own websites with a calendar schedule on them. Or you can pretty quickly find out if someone is already committed somewhere else. And that's the most fundamental piece of information. And then if you can't find where somewhere else someone is, you might need to contact their manager if they have a manager, or them personally. And then so you can quickly narrow down the field of availabilities and then just try and think about what would be the best solution. You know, mostly we try and keep a program intact if we can. Because the public has purchased tickets, sure. The orchestra's been preparing for those particular works over a long period of time in their private practice. But if it's someone who is a conductor who is obviously a great artist that we want to work with, and they just say, look, I can't for whatever reason, do that particular piece, well, we will accommodate their needs and make a change of program.
Have you ever?
Sounds like a dangerous
here
question.
We go.
Have you ever been, you know, so frustrated that you may want to pull your hair out, in which something happens, there's nobody there?
There's always someone. There's always someone. You know, wonderful musicians who are available at some point or other. In terms of conducting talent, you know, we, of course, have two fantastic assistants. Currently, Marcelo Leninger, who's in fact our associate conductor, whose concert is tonight in the Shed. And then Andris Porga, also Latvian, also Andris, not the music director. We call them Big Andris and Little Andris. And Andris Porga, or Little Andris, is conducting this Tuesday on Tangled on Parade. He's conducting the Boston Symphony. So if all else fails, they are there to fill in.
Yes, but that's conductors. But what about soloists?
There's a, you know, we will always find someone.
Now, we all know that Bernstein, right, got his start.
Yes, it was a famous.
That. What was that again?
That was the New York Philharmonic and Bruno Walter, who was conducting. It was a Sunday afternoon concert in Carnegie Hall, and Bernstein got the call that morning that he had to go on, and it was a tremendous success, covered by the New York Times, and as they say, the rest is history.
Indeed.
So these things can happen, and sometimes they can't happen. Someone may step in, and we all hope that it's going to be the moment of revelation, but whatever, for whatever reason, it doesn't quite change.
And one last thing, and you have in the past, even though you don't like to do it, changed the program if you have to.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. If you have to, yeah. But that's not, it's not ideal, but if that's the best solution, well, we go for it.
I can only imagine that on the other side of the phone, there are people who are, well, not wishing, you know, ill will on anyone, but is waiting for the Boston Symphony Orchestra to call.
Well, there are a lot of you know, a lot of people who just do keep track of what we're doing, and some occasionally you'll get an artist or a manager who'll say, "Oh, well, look, if you have any problem, I just want to let you know that X is available, and he does or she does that piece." So, and that information is actually very useful. It's not a shameless self-promotion by any means. It's a piece of information that we can tuck away and use it if we need to.
So I'm a political scientist, and I believe in the allocation of scarce resources, and you're a very powerful man. I mean, you have the power to call somebody and make them just like Bernstein.
No, Bernstein I don't think... I think you're...
Do they ever take you out to dinner or ply you with, you know, things in order to get you...
No, I've been around a long time. And,
yeah.
And I'm pretty immune to that sort of thing.
Well, they don't know that, maybe.
So you're just saying that immune to that sort of thing, would it... So my original thought when Alan was asking the question was that, oh, maybe that doesn't exist, and then you saying immune to that kind of thing would give me that it does exist.
Yes, and it's fairly clear. And this is life. I'm sure it happens to you gentlemen in your own fields, too.
Less.
Not nearly enough.
I listen to your book reviews, and I'm sure you're inundated with authors who
he
are...
He is.
Yeah, so, you know, it's human nature, and we just deal with it as we do.
Okay, maybe I misunderstood his question.
No, in other words, does somebody take him to Maxime's?
Plying you with you know, alcohol and
you know
other things
like that.
No, I'm chaste, really.
That's what I mean. You're chaste all around the place.
Anyway, moving along.
Spelling. So you come here, and this is what fascinates me, because you have all of these things going on, but you always have to have an eye to Boston in this next season.
That's all part of the job. I'm constantly working along with Mark and with Andris on several seasons at once. So I'm pretty preoccupied with the detail of next summer at the moment, which is going to be a terrific summer. It's the 75th anniversary of the Tangled Music Center, and there's some great plans that we have in formation. And, I've been fretting about details of that. The 15-16 season in Boston is also very much on my mind, and we've got that in good shape and plans way further ahead. We had some tremendous meetings with Andris when he was here a couple of weeks ago, and his management team, about some of the long-term plans for the orchestra in relation to touring and recording and commissioning. Mm. And it's great to be back in that mode. We were in something of a holding pattern, I think it would be fair to say, for a few years when Jimmy was not well, and then the period after he had to step down. And so now we're able to do a sort of more natural rhythm of planning going forward. And that certainly makes my life much easier. It means that we can plan in a more orderly way. We can think about prioritizing some of our activities in a different manner. So that's been very helpful. So we're in a good position.
You just said something that fascinating, and that is that Andres was here with his management team. Mm-hmm. So how much of an intervener is the management team when these decisions are being made as opposed to him?
Well, not an intervener. I don't think that's the right word. It's more part of a team of planning, and you know, he has to have his interest represented, but also his manager is someone who's worked with him right from the beginning, so she knows how he thinks and how he operates, the other activities that he has already in his books, what his ongoing commitments and relationships are. So all of that sort of information is absolutely central to this types of decisions we make. So
what are we looking forward to still to come at Tanglewood this year?
Well, lots of great things. This weekend, two wonderful programs, purely symphonic programs on tonight and Sunday afternoon. Film night, of course, tomorrow night is one of the annual highlights in terms of attendance. John is such a beloved figure, and he's refined and reshaped this program so many times to get the format that he thinks is going to really work. I think we were up to draft 22 of tomorrow night's program.
Really?
Which is not atypical of John in the way he likes to really think so carefully about it. So that's a lot, and then lots of great things. Candide in a couple of weeks' time, which is going to be a big undertaking. The final concert of the TMC Orchestra with the Complete Firebird with Charles Dutoit, which is great. Yo-Yo, of course, next weekend, a concert for Leonard Slatkin's 70th birthday. So it's, you know, we think we get over 1 week of, you know, a richness of offerings, and then we look to the next week and we've got just as much there before. So lots of great things.
Are you happy about attendance?
Yes, I think attendance has been good, and we've been pretty lucky weather-wise. I think we've had a couple of rainy nights, but nothing too dramatic. So attendance has been good, and I think the concerts have been really sensational. This is my 20th summer at Tanglewood.
Say it isn't so.
It is. And I'm never cease to be amazed at how fantastic the BSO is, and they are in great shape at the moment.
So will you introduce our special guest?
Well, I am very happy to introduce. This is one of my favorite people. And can you hear?
Yes.
Yes. Who made his debut at Tanglewood 3 summers ago. Talk about sensational. Been with us in Symphony Hall. One of the great violinists of today and one of the nicest people in our business. That long introduction to Agustín Haderlich. Great to see you.
Agustín, thank Hello. You so much for being with us.
Well, it's great to be here. Yes, good to see you, Tony.
it's a great pleasure to have you here. I know you were. It was last minute. We got you from rehearsal to here, so it's very nice to have you here.
Yes, I'm glad I made it. Yes.
You're going to join the Boston Symphony Orchestra on Sunday afternoon for Mozart's Violin Concerto No. 4 in D. And what do you love about this piece?
Well, I think it's a wonderful piece. I think it's probably quite underrated, I think, and maybe underplayed. It's not done so much. I think it's actually, it's in some ways maybe the hardest one to pull off of the, you know, between 3, 4, and 5, between those last three concertos, which are the most played. It's a very intimate, very sweet piece, but I've always really loved it. It's got an incredible slow movement, and it's just a very, very charming piece.
Yeah. What kind of violin do you play?
Yes, I am very lucky to play on a beautiful Stradivari violin from 1723,
wow.
Which I've had on loan, of course, for about the past 4 years.
When you say on loan, many of our people don't know how that works. How does it work?
Well, it's kind of, each loan is a bit different. In my case, it is through the Stradivari Society of Chicago, which connects young players who are, of course, always looking for instruments, and the owners of these priceless instruments. And since nowadays the prices have gone so crazy that basically, actually, no matter how successful you are, you can't really afford to buy something like this anymore. So I'm very lucky to play it.
So, did you ever leave it in a taxi cab?
No, but now that you mention it, this specific violin was left in a taxi cab by one of the previous.
No,
I wasn't driving the taxi. No.
Okay, all right, just checking. Because then they walk out.
And how did that turn out?
It was an honest taxi driver who turned it into Lost and Found. So it had a happy ending, the story. But of course, I heard a lot about it when I first got this instrument. You know, I was told, you know, don't leave it in a taxi. So at least that's one thing that maybe doesn't happen now to me.
That's great.
Just back to Tony for a second. In finding an artist like Augustine, what you are looking for, I have a line here in the introduction about, you know, the consistency of the repertoire from Paganini to Brahms to Bartok that is seldom encountered in a single artist. So that must be a dream for you.
Well, it is, and he's got this fantastically wide repertoire from everything from, you know, Bach and Haydn through Tom Addis and other contemporary works, and plays every piece with a sort of incredible commitment. So with someone like Augustine that we got to know first in the Barber Concerto a couple of years ago, and subsequently has played Brahms with us, and now this weekend we'll be playing Mozart, we can see a long trajectory over many years where we'll be able to explore all of these range of pieces with him, and it's a very happy prospect for us.
Is that unusual to find somebody with that kind of breadth?
This kind of breadth, yes. There are many tremendous instrumentalists. Some of them are quite specialized in their interests. Others are very broad. Someone of, you know, the regulars here at Tanglewood, and maybe he's been on the show recently, but I think of someone like Manny Axe, who plays a huge range and is constantly adding new works to his repertoire and commissioning pieces. There are some, but there are others who their artistry dictates that they only have a handful of pieces, and they feel they must concentrate on those and drill deeper and deeper into those works, where others their work is somehow helped and excited and fed by a breadth of interests. And I think Augustine fits into the latter category. I hope I'm not putting the wrong description on
it. So is that true, I guess? Is
Yeah. Yes, actually, that's a great way of putting it. I often feel that the contrast between the repertoire that I play. So I play a lot of pieces. I think last season it was 13 or 14 different concertos that are very different from each other. But I find that it really keeps me on my toes, all the switching styles like this, and it's also very refreshing to me. And I never get bored with the music that I play. I'm always incredibly excited for each.
How can
for
you
each
memorize all that stuff? I couldn't do the second. I remember in sixth grade they tried to get me to do the second verse of the Star Spangled Banner, and I could never quite get that right.
That's why you're on that side of the table.
So how do you do that?
Well, I think the more music you memorize, the faster it becomes, and the easier it becomes to memorize more music. It's like memorizing poetry. That the first poem you memorize is incredibly hard, but then if you do more, it becomes easier and faster to keep it in your mind. And so that's interestingly in music, I always find that the first piece by a certain composer, for example, might be a bit tricky to memorize, but once you know the language better, it becomes easier. So
it's easy for you to say.
Alan, we were talking earlier about last minute cancellations, and Augustine did exactly that a couple of weeks ago in Cleveland, where he stepped in literally at the last minute to do the Sibelius Violin Concerto.
Yes, they called me about a day before the concert, because Renaud Capuçon had a really bad flu, so he wasn't able to do it, and so I flew over there and did the Sibelius. Yes, it was.
And where were
very
you when
exciting.
You went to Cleveland?
I was in New York.
Oh, okay.
I was in New York. One of the I mean, there's always when this happens. This has happened a few times to me, and one always has to know when, but because it's always a really exciting prospect. But one also has to know when to say no if one feels that, oh, maybe I'm not gonna be ready in one day with this particular piece. But I had recently recorded the Sibelius, and so I felt quite strongly about it. And the main hurdle was actually whether I would be able to get a flight and you know, just sort of practical.
Right.
Practical.
We don't fly coach, do you? I mean, they get you there, right?
Well, they do, but the flights, they can be all kinds of
problems
yeah. with them, and sometimes there just aren't that many.
So, do you buy a seat for the Stradivarius?
No, I take it in and put it in the overhead compartment. And
you do not. You
but
do
that
not.
Is actually
it
one thing.
It doesn't shift during flight.
Yeah, but that is one thing to consider. For example, if the plane is very small, is the overhead the right size?
Aye.
Or even if it's an airline I don't fly a lot and they make me board last, then there's no space. So that those are actually things you have to think
you
about
bet.
When you have a violin.
Well, now we're horribly out of time, but I do want to thank both of you for being with us, and it's just a delight. You'll be performing on Sunday, and it's a real honor and a pleasure to meet you, August. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Always great to have you here.
Thank you, Joe.
Thank you so much. We need to leave the porch and let the musical professionals get back to doing what they do best, which is making beautiful music. But first, we have many people to thank, don't we, Alan?
That's right. Sincere thanks to all the guests who joined us this morning and for making time in their busy rehearsal schedules. Also, kudos to Tanglewood's Taryn Lott, Mark Volpe, Tony Fogg, Bernadette Horgan for hosting us, producing such amazing guests, and I mean that, and making us feel right at home. It's been a wonderful time.
Have a great weekend. Thank you.